Well, hello again. It is Justin, the Fully Live Athlete Pastor channel here, and we are on a journey through the Bible. It's the Online Bible Reading Club, Day 52. Hey, so we're looking at Numbers 1 and 2, and we're going to be looking at the first 19 verses of Mark chapter 3. And now as we consider where we are in the Bible, Numbers is the new book we're starting today. It is the fourth book in the Bible in the Old Testament, and it is the fourth book, fourth of five, written by Moses. Now, Numbers probably has the worst title of all the books of the Bible, right? Most people hate math, unfortunately, and this is a little bit misnamed. It's not really about math, but Numbers is the title that the book takes from its Greek name, which is arithmoi, which is the basis of the English word arithmetic, or numbers. Now, it does have two censuses in it, in chapters 1 and 4 there, which doesn't sound very interesting at all. Again, worst name ever, and that's probably why a lot of you probably haven't read it, and don't really care to read it, because it just sounds irrelevant. Now, it does have some Hebrew names, and one of them would be the word for in the wilderness. That might be a better title, in the wilderness, or Bamidbar. It is it's a much more exciting and accurately describes what's going on in the book, in the wilderness. They're journeying from Mount Sinai, and they're going to ultimately go out through the wilderness to the plains of Moab. And when they get to Moab, they're going to be on the verge of crossing into the promised land. And this is the great promise that was given to Abraham way back in Genesis 12. Remember that? Go back and read it if you don't remember it. But God brings a man, an old man, out of Ur of the Chaldeans and brings him and gives him a promise that you go to this land, I'm going to give it to you. It's going to be a great blessing. And you're going to have a great people in it. And again, this guy had no kids at the time. He believes God and he moves. Well, God's people have become over the history there, become slaves in Egypt, and then God has set them free from slavery. And now they're in the process of journeying. And the last book we saw, Leviticus, was a list of regulations and rules for worship. And this is going to have a little bit of narrative, a lot of narrative actually, and some law in there too. It's going to be a switching back of genres there, back and forth. So we'll be noticing that as you read through it. You'll also see as you get in here that what's fascinating about the first two chapters is it's the marching orders, and it's also the it's from as they're moving. Like I said, we're moving from Mount Sinai where they received the law to the promised land. That's what the book's about. They're going from Mount Sinai to the promised land. It's a journey through the wilderness. And they're going to have the life that they're going to live, which is going to be set up around the tabernacle. So they're going to be given marching orders of how the tribes are to be arranged around the tabernacle. The tent of meeting there is going to be in the middle of the people, and they're going to fan out around it according to tribe or families and clans there. So they're going to be arranged that way. That's how it's telling us that. And then it's also going to tell us when they arrive, they're going to march, and you're going to have Judah and Issachar and Zebulun in the front. They're going to set up on the front. And then you're going to have the priest right there close. And then they're going to have Simeon, Reuben, and Gad are going to fan off around to the south of the tent of meeting. And then the Levites, who are going to care for the tent of meeting at Tabernacle, and then Benjamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh, who will ultimately be on the west side there in the country, will be around there. And then at the end, Asher, Dan, and Naphtali will be up at the top or the north part of the arrangement there. So anyway, you got a lot of names here, you got a lot of people, and you might think, well, this is not really that instructive to me. But it is, I think, interesting that the people were counted and that each Christian counts, all right? The application there is that the spirit of our age wants to view church as this thing you go to, an event where it's a big meeting and there's a guy on stage and there's musicians up there and we watch it like we watch a movie at the theater and then we go home. and we can even tune in online and do that. But what the church is that everyone counts and everyone has jobs to do and roles they play. And ultimately, we don't like that because we don't like authority. We don't like structures to impose their will upon us, and it's just easier to avoid that entirely. So the path of least resistance, which church growth people have determined is useful, is to have a minimal amount of accountability for most people, and then a lot of people are going to do the work. Yeah, there's an old OU football coach who said, you know, football is a funny thing because you've got, you know, 80,000 people standing around doing nothing and 22 people doing everything. And that's kind of the way the church can feel like, is that, you know, in these models of like 22 people doing everything and everybody else doing nothing, just watching. Well, that's not the way it was meant to be. They're all playing a role here, and they had jobs to do, and they needed to be in their places, right? And that's because the whole thing about history and time and space is that it's to be ordered according to God's design and for His glory. Like last time, we talked about blessings and curses, and that really it's not about God having a great plan for our lives, but it's about God having a plan for history to glorify Himself. Okay, now we're going to arrange ourselves now in a new covenant reality by becoming members of particular churches and with particular people to love and particular people to serve and particular elders to lead us and care for us. And that's the way God designed it. So if you're not a member of a church, I am concerned. I think you should be a member of a church. And I think Numbers 1 and 2 would be a great place to examine. Do I keep the general message of this text in my life? That's a good point to make. I think you should definitely examine and find a local church where you can do jobs and participate in it and serve. That is the calling here. Every person matters, every tribe matters, and they all have roles to play in the greater people of God. Let's turn over to the New Testament. And I love this one because when we're looking at Mark 3:1-19, you see something that you might not expect, you know, because this has been a very action-oriented gospel. We've been walking slow through Mark, but Mark really does highlight the humanity of Christ and how He gets angry, you know, and that's fascinating that this Jesus, I don't know if you've seen Jesus portrayed that way. He typically is that kind of smiling face, like a white guy on a painting, like in a Mardell store. It's really weird and creepy. But Jesus is, you know, he's a carpenter. You know, I'm sure he had subcontractors and whatnot who just would drive him crazy and sin against him, and he would get angry with them. I'm sure, I have no idea. That's just a you know, silly comment there. But he's a real person. You know, the idea here, and it wasn't they just flew off the handle and got angry. He got angry at the sin he saw around him. And here you've got the leaders of the religious people here in Israel. And they are trying to use a man in his disability in order to trap Jesus and into healing him on the Sabbath so they can get a case against him. And Jesus heals him, but he is so angry at their, he knows their hearts and he knows they're just hardness of their hearts, and it grieves him. He's angry. It's the fact that it mentions he's angry is a real good news. It's good news for us because Jesus becomes exactly who we are. He bears our sin in his body because he becomes what we are. He becomes a true human being, but he does it righteously. He doesn't have unrighteous anger. He has holy anger against the sin that he encounters. Now, what's fascinating also in this text, the first 19 verses of Mark, there's a lot in there, but I'll comment on one more thing and we'll wrap it up for today. And I want to hear your comments and questions on this too. But as you look at it, the first beings that identify the Lord Jesus in the Bible here, when they see him, are demons. Isn't that interesting? You know, it's a great crowd is following Jesus, he's gonna, you know, we see there he's gonna take these disciples and call them, and they're gonna be the apostles, right? But if you look at verse 11, whenever the unclean spirits saw Jesus, they fell down before him and cried out, "You're the Son of God." The first people to really understand who Jesus is are the enemy. And that's the great good news, is that God had promised a son of a woman, the seed of the woman, the offspring, who's going to come, and he's the son of man, the son of God, who is going to crush the evil one. And these demons and spirits are working for the man, the ancient serpent, Satan, the accuser. And they know that they are under, their time is limited, and they are about to be crushed. And so they're like, you know, they're like, hey, you know, like, you're the son of God. And they try to destroy Jesus. They're afraid, of course. Anyway, I think it's fascinating, don't you? Don't you feel that's a unique point, that we are so wrapped up in ourselves, even seeing Jesus healing hands and healing legs and all that we've seen so far and forgiving sins, that we don't see him rightly as he is, but the wicked, evil spirits, of course, do know him. And the point that I want you to know there is, it's not just enough to know Jesus, you have to trust him. You have to follow him. They know him, but they're still damned. We will be in the same position unless we trust him and follow him, put our faith in him. So with that said, what questions do you have? I think we've raised a lot of things to talk about today. You can feel free to disagree with me. I'm not always going to nail everything perfectly. But I'm going to try to help you to understand the Bible better and try to understand it myself better, because in that we get to know the Lord. So, okay, hope you're well. Let's talk soon. We'll do another live stream. God bless you. If you're watching the end, like it and comment, please. Do all you can to promote the channel so that we can get more people seeing and knowing God. Okay, this is the Bible Full Life Athlete Best channel. God bless you guys. We'll see you later.